The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
And by the way, that 1962 primary certificate maths paper we put on the Pat Kenny Show Twitter or X account, so you can have a go yourself and see, could you do three of those questions inside 60 minutes? Well, one man who could is sitting with me now, Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin. Luke, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. I'm not sure I could. You handed this to me there. It looks pretty complicated, doesn't it? But 1962.
Well, I mean, people have forgotten about shillings and pence.
They have. That's the big difference, I suppose.
Now, you want to put a star in a bottle.
I do. Yeah, I've been following this for years, actually, for this idea of nuclear fusion. Can you make a star in a bottle is the tagline they use for this. This could be the answer to all our energy needs, right? So what it is, and the physicists have known this for a while, if two nuclei fuse from two atoms, you get a huge release of energy. And this could be a clean source of energy. There's no carbon emissions or nothing, you know. Yeah. So the dream is to make stuff that can achieve a star in a bottle, because stars are powered by this.
So it's the reverse of fission, you actually break something up with a release of energy.
You've got it, and it's E equals MC squared, Pat, because it turns out when two nuclei fuse, they lose a bit of mass. Imagine two billiard balls fusing. A bit of mass comes off, but it's converted into energy based on E equals MC squared, because the M in that equation is mass. There's a relationship which Einstein's put between mass and energy.
So in the case of fission, you end up with all this dirty stuff left over,
radioactivity,
as well as your energy.
Yeah.
But in this case, with fusion, you get the energy out, but you are left with a stable compound.
You've got
at
it.
The end.
And there's no radioactivity is the key thing. You know, so it's a very safe, clean way to do it. And they've been trying to do this for decades, it must be said. But the news in the last week or two is they're getting closer. As you said to me earlier, they seem to be 10 years away all the time from this. But now they seem to be making a bit of progress, and it's getting more exciting, really.
Now, who's doing it?
Well, all kinds of people are. Now, this particular one, it's two particular people who used to work for Elon Musk, amazingly, right? And they've joined forces to try and crack this in a way. Robert Langtree and Brian Reardon are their names. They worked for Musk in Blue Origin, that space company. And they've left that now to say they can do it. And what they're saying is that they can make a benchtop device. So this would be like a thing shaped like a packing case almost, and they're claiming that a small device,
because the stuff at the moment, anything I've seen, they're enormous, absolutely huge.
Well, this is a private sector thing, which is good, I suppose. There's a huge publicly funded effort. It's called ITER, you may have heard of that. That stands for the International Thermonuclear Experimental Reactor. That's running in France at the moment, costing billions to run, but it's a good one. It's 35 countries are collaborating, including the US. They're still part of it. China are all in this. For me it's a good example of big science being done collaboratively. They're doing it anyway, right, with public money, and they're claiming progress. But these guys are going, oh, we can do it a bit better than you.
What are the conditions that are needed for a fusion to take place?
Well, this is first shown in stars, of course. This is what happens in stars. When you see starlight, our own sun, it's all fusion, right? So two atoms of hydrogen, two nuclei of hydrogen, fuse and form helium, and the energy comes off as heat, you know?
Now, the conditions in the sun are pretty inimical to any kind of survival of any material.
That's the problem.
You stick steel in there and it's gone. It's evaporating.
Right. The problem is the nuclei are positively charged. And as you know, opposites attract. They'll repel each other. So how do you get them to hit off each other is the idea. Now, in the sun, extremely high pressure and very high temperature, 15 million degrees centigrade, right? That's in the sun. That creates the conditions to allow these two nuclei of hydrogen to smash into each other. You're forcing them together through high pressure and high temperature. And of course, we can't create that on Earth because it's too difficult. Yeah. You know? But these machines are trying to mimic those conditions.
And they're trying to literally mimic them with high temperature and high pressure. That's why they're so enormous.
That's right.
But this desktop or tabletop version, what is different about that idea?
It builds on the ITER thing anyway. It's somewhat similar technology. They're using two concentric circles, right? And the nuclei run around these circles in opposite directions. Now, of course, the physics of this is beyond me. High magnetic field in a vacuum. So they've changed some of the conditions. Fire away, you know, round, round and round. And then you begin to see the nuclei begin to fuse.
So it's not that every single atom is going to, or nucleus is going to bump into every other one. It's just you hope that a few of them will bump into each other and generate energy.
You've got it, but it's very random is the problem. Like most things in the atomic world are random.
If you have enough going on.
You have enough going on, exactly. And it recirculates in some way and increases the chance of the two nuclei smashing into each other. And they're claiming they're seeing it happening, you see, and that's where the progress is. Now, the problem is, Pat, you still need radioactivity for this. That's the drawback. You need deuterium and tritium. Now, as you may know, they're isotopes of hydrogen. They're needed at the moment to make this work, and that will be a source of radioactivity, which is a problem. It's very hard to make tritium, for instance. You know, So that's one slight criticism of this. But still, they're taking the first steps in that direction using those particular isotopes of hydrogen.
Now, huge amounts of energy are required to run these machines, whether they're the small packing case size or shipping container size machines, or whether they're the size of a valley. But the idea is you put energy in, but as long as you get a little bit more out the other side, then you're in business.
It's a bit like the perpetual motion machine in a way, and that's what these things do. And it is based on Einstein, E equals MC squared, because mass and energy can convert, you know. So you're right, though. You're putting a bit of energy in, and you're getting much more out. Now, the other thing that's missing here, Pat, is how do you capture the energy? They're going to generate steam. It's a very old-fashioned idea, strangely, just like a steam turbine in a way. They're saying that this energy can now be captured to boil water. It sounds very simple.
I mean, it's what's happening in every power station,
same everywhere.
Same theory,
With the famous steam turbine invented by Parsons in Trinity, by the way. It's the same idea. You know, you're making boiling water. Steam now is being made, and that turns the turbine, right? And the question is, can you do that now at no cost? Obviously, in the case of power stations, you're burning coal and various things, and you're generating carbon. In this situation, you're generating the steam, and there's a net gain in energy, and that's highly efficient then. And these turbines could run forever, is the idea, I guess.
Now, over the years, there have been loads of people who've had the eureka moment. I remember we did a story on television when I was doing something for RT. We went up to County Louth, where there was a guy who basically had this perpetual motion machine and had sold it to a lot of interested parties as an idea that would work. Right. Of course, you can't get more out than you put in. That's just, it doesn't happen. But in this case, we understand the science of it would work.
Precisely. Yeah, the physics adds up. The maths, in fact, it's a mathematical property, but it's true. You might be able to achieve it.
But here's the question. I know the radioactive waste and the processing of waste and so on is the real problem with fission. But they're talking now about modular fission reactors, which would be quite tidy in size.
That's right,
And therefore, the amount of waste they would generate. We are a small country that doesn't require, in the global sense, too much energy.
Yep.
Might we be better off with a couple of these?
We might. Well, it's the climate change crisis is driving much of this part, remember. Why are they putting billions into this? It's because of the climate change problem. You could use radioactivity as a way to do this, or rather, as you say, fission. That's now more and more feasible, and it's got safer as well. Now, of course, the climate change thing would be we should be doing something about the carbon emissions. It's very important, but I see it as a dual thing. You know, we need a new technology, plus we need to limit carbon emissions, and maybe a regular nuclear reactor might be part of this anyway.
Now, you and I talked before about molten salt reactors, which cannot run away. I mean, what happens if they go wrong is that the molten salt becomes molten no longer and everything stops.
That's right.
So it's very safe in that sense. But I've often wondered about nuclear submarines and nuclear aircraft carriers. They must have very tidy nuclear reactors on board.
Safety first, of course.
So why can't we have those?
This is the question, exactly. And the molten salt business, it still amazes us that it hasn't been developed more and more. There is lots of work going into that still, though, must be said. And in this particular case, these two guys, ex-Blue Origin, they're going back to Bezos. This could fuel a spaceship, you see. Maybe the first use of this. Not quite like the Starship Enterprise, but it might be an engine of sorts stuck onto a spaceship to go to Mars. Very efficient, high energy here, you know. We won't quite reach warp speed, but they're claiming this. The guy who runs it, this guy Reardon, I saw him being interviewed, very bullish. He said, we can generate a spaceship here with this device, you know. So maybe that might be the first application. It'll be in some sort of propulsion.
You got to have people who think big. You really do.
You do. You do indeed. Exactly.
The visionaries.
That's exactly it.
Even if everything they envision doesn't happen, some of it just might.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the idea.
All
precisely.
Right. Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College Dublin, he's taking away that paper with him. And he'll have
I'll have the answer in about 10 minutes.
Or less.
I don't know.
Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin, thank you very much for joining us. Well, now.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.